Welcome to the Dog Show with Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk AM 1150. And we've got a great show today, as always. I have a couple of announcements, and then we'll be talking with the author of a book called Good Dog, Happy Baby, talking about sort of all things related to preparing your dog for the arrival of your child. And then after that, I'll be talking with Ellen Escarcega, who's the chair of COLA, which is stands for Citizens for Off-Leash Areas. There's some talk and surveys and all sorts of action going on in Seattle around the future of dog parks in Seattle. So we'll be talking with Ellen with COLA after I talk with Michael Wambacher, who's the author of Good Dog, Happy Baby. Before that, though, I just want to say hi to Eric, of course. How you doing, Eric?
Hey, good afternoon, Julie. I'm doing okay this week. How are you?
I'm great. Had a softball tournament last weekend in beautiful Vancouver, Washington.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, it was fun. I missed my dogs.
Did you win?
You know, you win some, you lose some.
So I'll take that as a no.
We won some, we lost some.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was really fun, though. Hey, I wanted to just let everybody know before we get going with today's show, Vashon Sheepdog Classic is one of my favorite events all year. And this year it is September 10th through the 13th on Vashon Island, just west of Seattle. And it's a really great event. It goes on Thursday through Sunday, all day, all 4 days. The most popular days, of course, are Saturday and Sunday. And it's really fun. You actually get to see sheep herding trials, and it's mostly border collies competing with their handlers, and it's really fun to watch. There's vendors and arts and crafts and local food, and it's a really, really fun event. Vashon Sheepdog Classic this year, September 10th through the 13th on Vashon Island. You can go to vashonsheepdogclassic.com. I will be leading a panel discussion with some of the handlers who are participating in the event on both Saturday and Sunday this year, midday. So look forward to that. I'll be there all 4 days this year, and I can't wait. VashonSheepdogClassic.com. Great day to take your dog for a walk.
It's a good point.
Yep.
We've been lucky enough to actually have a few cooler days, which makes it easier. I think the hot weather was putting people and animals on edge.
Yeah.
They're just making them a little bit crazier than usual.
Yeah.
I was walking our dog, both of our dogs, last week, and a cat actually attacked the beagle. Yeah, Abby. And I've never seen that happen before.
Hmm.
So, and it was all because Sammy, the non-beagle, the mutt, the border collie, was starting to get excited about the fact that there was a cat. But the cat said, I'm not going to mess with you. You seem too energetic, and went and attacked the beagle instead.
I'm going to make your friend pay.
Right.
Wow.
Poor Abby.
Yeah. So, is she okay?
Yeah, she's fine. Yeah.
Good.
Thankfully, we gave the cat the old heave-ho and kept on moving.
You don't hear that happening too often.
No, you don't, but that just plays to my theory that the heat's making
everybody crazy.
And animals crazy, yeah.
Yeah, well, I hear you. I welcome the cooler weather. All right, well, let's bring Michael Wambacher on the show. He's the author of a book called Good Dog, Happy Baby, Preparing Your Dog for the Arrival of Your Child. Michael, welcome to the Dog Show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on with you.
Now, am I saying your last name right?
Pretty close, yep.
Is it Wambacher or
it's Wambacher, Wambacher. Either one's fine,
either
Wambacher.
One.
About as good as it gets.
All right. So this book is, certainly a great angle and a much needed topic for people to have resources around. We share a profession in working with dog training and behavior, and we also share a common perspective of having a balanced approach to working with dogs. And I love what you said in the beginning of your book. And I've said this before on the show a number of times when I've talked about this topic, not kids and dogs, but just dog behavior and training, when people say, oh, what kind of training do you do? It's like, well, who's the dog? So love that you acknowledge that at the beginning of the book. And it's loaded with a lot of great information. And we're going to kind of get to some of that in this show. But if you'd like to find out more about the book, the title is Good Dog, Happy Baby. And the website is gooddoghappybaby.com. So real easy to remember. I've posted a link to the website on our Facebook page. You can just go to Facebook and search for The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, and you can get a link to the website there. And I'll also post all of Michael's information on our homepage, which is dogradioshow.com. So, Michael, first of all, so you work professionally as a dog trainer, and what inspired you to write this book? Did you go through this yourself? Did you have a baby and sort of go through this yourself? And was that your inspiration, or was it just hearing clients talk about it?
No, it was clients. It was pretty early on. I've been full-time plus training dogs for about 20 years. I've done something like 30,000 private consultations at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very early on in the first or second year, and there are two things kind of converged. One, I was looking to write a book, but because there's so many dog training books out there and me not really, I was just getting started. I figured if I write another dog training book, it's just going to disappear.
Right.
What's a niche that hasn't really been addressed? And kind of at that same time, I had a very kind of horrific experience with a couple of clients, young couple, like 20. I had this kind of crazy Jack Russell Terrier, and, and they're pregnant, and they had the baby on the way. And I started to just sort of try to alert them to what they were going to need to do with this dog in order to prepare him for this. And they just didn't take it seriously. Oh, he's fine. He's our lover boy. He would never, blah, 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 all this stuff. And I told them things like, look, don't take him out for a last hurrah of indulgence 2 or 3 weeks before your baby comes, because it's going to get cut off and he's going to associate that with the arrival of your child.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, they're being young and foolish and just completely disregarded all of it. And, the result was predictable and catastrophic. Well, it wasn't catastrophic. It was just tragic, because after about 3 months, the dog was so out of control with jealousy that the woman, understandably, she's home alone. The husband's off working. She's got this baby to deal with. It was just too much for her. She got rid of the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that so many, but that was a particularly dramatic case. And I just said, okay, that's it. I looked around to see what there was to help people with this, and there wasn't anything. So I wrote a first version of this book that's now called Good Dog, Happy Baby. And that's really what started me on this. And since then I've had a lot of experience with this subject, which just reinforces my conviction in the effectiveness of everything that's in that book.
Yeah. Well, it is such a huge transition for everybody to adjust to a new baby, and the dog is not an exception at all. And it's definitely important for people to, there's a lot, and you talk a lot about this in your book, that there's so much that people can do in all different, some people have very challenging, unruly dogs who really need some boundaries put in place. And even if your dog isn't particularly challenging or unruly, they're still sensitive. They all are. So there's a lot of things that people can do regardless to help ease the transition, because it is going to be a big adjustment for everybody, guaranteed.
Exactly. In an ideal world, in an ideal world for the dog owner, the big adjustment will be the baby. And if you've done all your prep work, it won't be such a big adjustment for the dog, if you've done your prep work.
Yeah.
And then, it gives mom one less thing to worry about.
So one of the things that you start off talking about is your Doggy 12-step program, and this is basically a way for people to kind of establish a little bit more control and structure in the relationship, and especially with dogs who are maybe pushy with interactions and attention. Especially, that was something that I really thought of as I was reading through your sort of protocol, was like how important especially the attention getting behaviors are to get in check, because it's really the attention that's going to be dramatically impacted by the arrival of a baby. And that can be really upsetting for the dog and the people if the dog is used to calling the shots all the time, and then all of a sudden there's a baby, and it can end up getting real messy.
It's the biggest thing. It's the biggest single thing that creates that creates issues, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, the second, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say the second biggest thing is just really dogs that are just sensitive and reactive.
Yeah.
You know, they're not, both of those are equally problematic.
So we'll talk about that, but first I want to talk about your general, like you talked about leadership, and you acknowledge this in the book, and I appreciate this, and I happen to agree with you about the kind of the dog training industry, and there's not really any regulation for it, and so there's a whole gamut of a sort of spectrum of philosophies. And I think especially, hopefully, people who have worked in this field for a long time realize that there's lots, you know, every dog is different, just like people. So different genetics, different personalities, different temperaments, you know, a different history and experience and all that kind of stuff, that all play into, I think, formulating a plan to be effective is important to take the dog as an individual into consideration. But you talked about leadership, which is something that is pretty heavily debated, I guess, in the industry. And mm-hmm. and it's important, I think, for people, you know, every dog is different. So there's some dogs that are a sort of harder temperament and really pushy and really require a stronger presence for leadership. And then there's other dogs that are more laid back and don't really care as much about that, as much, you know, hierarchy and stuff like that. And but what you talked about is that it's not about being a bully, and it's not about being, you know, a big scary person and being your dog's leader. Ultimately, what it comes down to is having control when you want it and how important that is. And you talk about all the different ways that plays out. So will you talk, just in your own words, tell us about, because that was pretty much the one of the main themes was like, get control. If you don't have it now, mm-hmm. get it before the baby comes.
Mm-hmm.
So control of what?
Well, you want to control, a lot of things. You want to control your environment, but you primarily want to have the kind of relationship with your dog where they, you know, I mean, the way I've been putting it in my classes lately, because I'm always kind of reformulate how I say things, is you want to get the dog in the habit of exercising impulse control and checking in with you, exercising impulse control and checking in with you. I know that the thing you said about leadership, and it's a very divisive topic in the dog training world. In fact, I'm just writing, we're beginning to write a book about the subject. But I'm convinced, you know, we want to replace language like dominance and submission. I think it's time to replace that language with a little bit more nuanced language. But leadership is key. It's key for dogs. It's key for children. That's the providing of structure, guidance, authority, and setting direction and setting tone. That's what leadership is. I point out in the book, it's not about being a bully, about, you know, things like, you know, just alpha rolling the dog and staring them in the eyes and showing them who's boss, but, you know, whatever that means to anybody. But it definitely means setting up appropriate boundaries and so forth. And again, it's just like with a small child, you have to do the same thing. And if you don't, there's consequences. So I, you know, there are people who will absolutely deny what I just said, that the dogs only operate according to principles of operant conditioning and their social context doesn't really matter. And you just click at the right moment and they'll, you know, and give them a treat and they'll learn everything they need to know. And I just know that isn't true.
Yeah.
Again, it's a long, heated debate that we're probably not going to come to a conclusion on in this talk, but I feel like for parents who want help now, establishing that on the front end as the foundation for everything else is absolutely key.
Well, and one of the things I think that's really important to clarify, kind of to your point, is that there's a difference between training a dog and living with a dog. So in the context of dog training, just like whale training, there's certain methods that work well in a controlled environment. Dogs don't, you know, I mean, a lot of this, like the clicker method, for example, is derived from marine mammal training, and, you know, dogs
right.
don't live in a tank at SeaWorld.
Can I steal that line?
Sure.
That's a good line. Is it, you know, the difference between training training and living with. That's absolutely true. And to your other point in relation to that, yeah, nobody lives with a walrus in the house.
Yeah.
So it's a very controlled environment, you know, and like you said, and that's a whole other debate. I find it funny sometimes that the clicker trainers point to SeaWorld as an example of, you know, what you can do with marine mammals, and, you know, most of us are aware of what's been going on around that.
Right.
But I think your bigger point is right. It's much different to be in a relational system with a dog 24/7.
Yeah.
As opposed to training them for an obedience competition to do really tight heels and so forth and so on. So I have no problem with clicker training at all, by the way.
Yeah.
I just think it's the be-all, end-all solution to every problem. It's just incomplete. And it has a terrible effect on a lot of clients in that it's overly cerebral. Most people can't really pull it off with limited time and circumstances, and they can't control the environment. Like,
right.
Telling a person whose dog is barking like crazy at 3 a.m. to control the environment is ridiculous.
Right.
And, you know, to treat them when they're quiet after an episode of 5 minutes of barking to reward the silence, which actually in the end just produces more barking. This is the kind of advice that is often handed out. But if you're told, well, look, maybe you should put a citronella barking collar on the dog that will give a few little spritzes of a harmless spray, and in 85 to 90% of the cases eliminate the barking immediately, and you're accused of being, you know, like an animal abuser.
Right.
So, you know, but it messes clients up because they don't know what to do.
Right.
It's like, okay, nobody wants to be mean. So then, you know, you've got a trainer telling you, well, spritzing your dog with a little bottle of water is not different than kicking it across the room.
Right.
It's very confusing. And so I'm fairly adamant about the fact that that's just bad information. And that, like you said, living with a dog is very different than training to specific functions.
Yeah. And I, you know, one of the things, too, that I always think about is like, okay, well, if we're talking about ultimately really talking about communication and education, if we're trying to educate a dog about this or that, we need communication. And the best language to speak would be the dog's language, ultimately, and to try to be sensitive to that. And so on the point of, you know, praise versus correction and all that stuff, it's like, well, you know, I mean, dogs correct each other. Like, they tell each other off sometimes, like, hey, don't do that, you know,
right,
too
exactly.
close or whatever, you know, like, knock it off, or and also just right. I mean, there's just consequences in nature. So anyway, so we're on agreement with that. Well, let's move on. You had a really interesting conversation about dominance and hierarchy over the years, really, but two that stand out for those of you who are listening who want to dig in a little bit more in depth about that part of the conversation. You can go into our archives, just go to dogradioshow.com and go to the podcast page. I had a really great conversation with Patricia McConnell about dominance, and then really, really interesting conversation with Temple Grandin about hierarchy, and also James Ha. So there's a couple names to throw out in the archives you can search. So Good Dog, Happy Baby is your book. And so we talked, one of the first things that you say is like, listen, if you don't have appropriate boundaries and if your dog is unmanageable generally, get that taken care of before the baby comes. And you outline your doggy 12-step program in your book. That's great. So if you're interested in more information about that, if you're expecting, definitely check out the book. It's called Good Dog, Happy Baby. And I assume, Michael, it's available on Amazon and pretty much otherwise widely.
Yeah. All the usual places.
Yep. So then you talk about behavioral problems. And I think that this is where obviously it gets a little bit more complicated. And you say in the book, especially if people are particularly nervous about their dog and they have maybe a reactive dog in general, or they know that their dog doesn't like kids. I encourage people oftentimes when I talk about behavioral, especially with aggression, to really encourage people to find somebody to work with, because it's so hard to read something or to hear something or to watch something on television and then apply that to your dog, because every dog is different. So you outline a lot of things that people can start to implement, and you outline them very clearly in your book. And then you say also, like, listen, if your dog has moderate to severe aggression, find somebody to work with, because, you know, it's always a good idea to have sort of one-on-one professional help with that. Mm-hmm. First thing you talked about was desensitization. So if you have a dog that's sort of reactive to the environment or sensitive to the environment, there's a lot of ways that you can desensitize the dog to children handling and sounds. So you talk about systematic desensitization. Will you just say a few words about that?
Well, yeah, it's a, you know, I mean, it kind of ties into what you were saying earlier and also the bigger conversation about when do you use, you know, when do you use punitive measures? So, for example, you touch your dog on the rear end, they go to bite you, you punish them. Okay, that might suppress the behavior temporarily, but I'm, you know, I'm convinced, I mean, I do feel that, you know, compulsion and occasionally punishment do have a role in training, but what in the end really undermines the behavior is teaching the dog a new set of associations and a positive context for, you know, with that behavior. So, for example, if it's, you know, being touched on the rear end, the dog gets reactive. If you combine that consistently over time with something very, you know, positive, I mean, just a simple thing, be it, you know, a piece of hot dog or something like that,
right.
And you would start to very slowly approach touching that sensitive part and beneath the threshold of the dog's reactivity, you start to associate, you know, chewing on a piece of string cheese or something like that. If the dog starts to get, if the dog starts to get reactive, you back off a little bit and then you try it again and you go, and it's that sort of thing that's ultimately going to reliably undermine a behavior. You know, being punitive in and of itself generally, that's not true in every case, but certainly in fear-related things and with a lot of other behaviors, just using a, you know, any kind of heavy-handed approach won't reliably resolve the behavior. The dog, for example, might let you touch him there,
right?
But when somebody else with whom he doesn't have that relationship with,
right.
Of whom he's not so intimidated, like a baby,
right?
He's not going to put up with that, and then a lot of that pent up rage might get expressed in that direction. So,
right.
You know, systematic desensitization for many, 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 many things is absolutely key to undermining problem behaviors, and it's something you want to emphasize. And it takes time,
yeah,
and patience.
Yep.
And, you know, that's why the minute you find out you're pregnant, I encourage people to take a little inventory of their dog's behavior. And for those that require systematic desensitization, like, get started.
Yeah.
Because it can take time.
Yeah. And that's important, in general with this work, but really knowing that some things take time. It's not something that you're going to fix in a week or 2 weeks. You know, some things really take quite some time and repetition, and to know that that's what you're getting into, and to just have faith that you will start to notice progress, but that you have to stay with it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more with Michael Wambacher, who's the author of a book called Good Dog, Happy Baby. And you can find the website for the book is gooddoghappybaby.com. Easy to remember, and you can buy the book on Amazon and pretty much anywhere else you can buy books. Good Dog, Happy Baby. We'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes.
Why'd you do it, Fluffy, on the porch? Good dog, Fluffy. Old friend.
The Natural Pet Pantry is Seattle's original source for wholesome dog and cat meals, offering 8 different protein options to accommodate your pet's dietary needs. Made locally using all U.S.-sourced ingredients, their freshly ground stews, raw or cooked, can be purchased from their 2 stores in Burien and Kirkland, most independent pet supply stores, or delivered right to your door. Go to naturalpetpantry.com for more information. I'm Julie Forbes, and my first choice for my pet's food is the Natural Pet Pantry. It's the educated choice.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Anti-Icky Poo, the product that gets the stink out, we cover the world of animals. This week, it's a harmonic and energy-shifting Sunday with Jude and Paul Ponton from Whispering Dragon in Seattle. They'll be in the studio with their acutonic forks, Tibetan bowls and bells, pooas and rattles, ready to do remote sessions for you, your animal friends, your home or business. Open phone lines throughout the show, so call in early. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist, and owner of Sensitive Dog, thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedog.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a two-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's Dog Behavior Training and Nutrition Specialist. www.sensitivedog.com. Hey, Dog Show fans. Does something stink in your home or car? Pure Air is a powerful odor eliminator that is the only natural food-grade product in its category. It works on bedding, kennels, litter boxes, urine, vomit, poop, even skunk spray. You know, all the fun smells our pets bring into our home. It's so non-toxic that you can literally eat it, a requirement for our home and our dogs. Spray Pure Air on anything you can put water on and let your nose watch the odor disappear. Ask for Pure Air in stores that specialize in natural, non-toxic products for home. Or visit dogradioshow.com for a link to their website. I'm Julie Forbes, your host of The Dog Show. Pure Air is the only odor eliminator you'll find in my home. You'll love it.
Three ways to listen. On the AM dial at 1150, on the FM HD dial at 98.9 HD3, or online at 1150kknw.com. One great station. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Fluffy chases the other doggies on the path.
I don't know where you get these songs, Eric, I swear.
It's a country classic, right?
That was a particularly soulful, heavy one.
Song about Fluffy.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we're back with Michael Wambacher, who's the author of Good Dog, Happy Baby, Preparing Your Dog for the Arrival of Your Child. And if you missed any part of this interview or any of our over 300 episodes, you can find them all archived on our website, dogradioshow.com. You can also download them for free from iTunes. And I will also post this and our other interviews are up on our Facebook page as well, The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. So, Michael, we were talking a bit about sort of if your dog feels unmanageable or out of control, kind of the first part of your book, you talk about the Doggy 12-Step Program to establish some control and some maybe clean up the leadership dynamic a bit before the baby comes. That's the key, before the baby comes.
Absolutely, because you're going to be hard-pressed afterwards.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So then you talk about some more behavioral challenges. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about today as part of what you talk about in the book was the possessive dog is possessive of the food bowl or toys or bones or something like that. And I was sort of holding my breath as I was reading it because I was like, oh, I hope, you know, I'm not sure what he's going to say about this. And I was relieved in this situation to see that you were talking about in this situation. And we've talked about how we're both balanced trainers and we're not, you know, anti-correction or consequence sometimes, but you just have to know when and where to use it. But that in this situation,
absolutely,
the positive association is so important because I've had a lot of people, of clients who once they meet me, they're like, oh, yeah, well, my dog gets kind of tense around the food bowl, or they get a new puppy and they're like, well, I don't want my dog to, you know, guard the food bowl. So I read that I should just pick up the food bowl a bunch of times during the day. And I'm like, well, you know, that's a great way to create a possessive behavior because the dog is going to start to see you as a threat and be like, stop taking my food bowl. So adding in that positive association so that, okay, if you're a little tense or guarded around your food bowl, I'm going to just approach over and over and over again and drop something even more delicious than what you're eating into your bowl. And so eventually the dog gets, oh, you're coming close to my bowl. Sweet. What are you going to add into my food bowl that tastes even better than what I have? As opposed to like, oh, I got to take your food bowl a million times.
Well, that's right. I mean, as I always tell my, you know, students in my classes, the whole idea with object guarding like that. I mean, again, there are times when you might need to use something a little stronger, but generally what's going to undermine the behavior is building trust. You know, and the analogy that I use for people, if somebody comes up to you and says, hey, give me your wallet.
Right.
You know, the first couple of times you're going to go, I don't know. But, you know, let's say you do it and they put a $100 bill in it and they give it right back to you. You know, after about the third or fourth or fifth time of that happening, when you see that person coming, you're going to be pulling your wallet out and volunteering it to them very quickly because you know, A, that you're not losing anything, and B, your situation is going to be improved very quickly.
Yep.
So I always make sure to tell people, look, in this situation, when you take up the food dish and put them, don't ask them for sit, don't ask them to down, don't ask them for anything. Just take it, improve it, return it, make it fast. Don't make it, and don't make it a big deal.
Yep.
And that's really, it's really essential. It's about building trust, undermining fear of loss. That's normally the thing, and it can take, again, like anything, it can take time. But that's the emphasis you want to put there.
One of the examples that I thought of, since your focus in this book is about dogs and babies and dogs and kids, was I was remembering this client where they had a Vizsla who they had had for years, and then they had a baby, and he was a little miffed about the baby's presence. And it's always when the baby, especially when the baby starts moving, the baby gets mobile and starts crawling, that's when they start to have issues.
8 months is the big threshold. 8 months is the huge threshold because the kids start crawling, and that's what you're going to find out whether you did it or whether you didn't.
Right. And so he was getting growly over bones. You know, they gave the dog marrow bones, and he would eat the marrow, clean it off, and then would have the bones laying around and stuff. And so one of the things that I say this in general, like for people when they have puppies, even is like, don't, if the dog experiences scarcity of something, then they're going to be way more likely to feel possessive. So I said, get like 20 bones and put them all out. Of course, supervise, like never, you talk about this, how important supervision is, and always.
Mm-hmm.
But that was sort of something that I thought of as I was reading through all the stuff that you talked about with resource guarding and possession, was just about a great way to prevent that from developing in the first place is just to have the dog experience an abundance of whatever it is, and then they're not guarded about it.
So how did it work out in that case for you? Did that work out?
Yeah. It took him some time, but he did relax because he was like, well, oh my gosh, there's bones everywhere. And what ended up happening was that the baby ended up picking up the bones and she just kept giving them to the dog.
And then the dog loved that.
Dog's like, oh, okay, cool. Okay, I guess you're cool. Of course, supervised. Everything's always really supervised.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
it's very interesting, right? Because like you said earlier, all dogs are different. So you have to try different things in different situations, mm-hmm. For example, sometimes controlling the environment, right? So in a situation like that, if it's depending on how bad the dog is, you obviously want to do all the positive stuff. But sometimes maybe give the dog a bone like that only in its crate. I mean, you can go into the flooding direction, which is what you were doing, and that worked. And sometimes you got to go in the other direction and just, on the one hand, do all the training, to minimize the dog's kind of tension about the whole thing, but just to be safe, also eliminate the situation where the dog and the baby could come to the bone at the same time and have a problem, So it's very fluid, but you got to think a little creatively. That's why I hate the kind of one-dimensional approaches. I don't like to say, you only do this and you never do that.
Yeah, and every dog is different, so...
You do
one thing and it works for one dog, but not the other. You just never know what they're going to do with it.
Well, that's why we as trainers have to be, you have to have a multiplicity of approaches available, and then you have to be a little creative and experimental sometimes.
So you talk about so much, and we're obviously not going to get to everything today, but you can get all the information with the book. The title is Good Dog, Happy Baby. And the website is gooddoghappybaby.com. And you talk about excessive barking. You talk about multiple dog households, transitioning. One of the things that I loved, because I've recommended people start walking their dog with a stroller. You know, like that's something people don't even think of. Like, oh, now I'm going to have this thing on wheels that I'm going to be wheeling. And some dogs get weirded out by that, or they just don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if your dog's pulling on leash, you need to teach them not to pull on leash so that you can manage them with a stroller now. But I didn't think of in the book. I love that you talked about the motorized baby swings. And how, I mean, you never know, especially if you have a dog that's really sensitive to their environment, like some of these things can really kind of weird them out. And so getting them used to those types of things before the baby arrives. And then you said to get a doll and carry the doll around.
It's a silly one. It's a silly one. It is. I get it. I mean, I think I would feel silly doing it. But, and of course, like I said in the book, also, you know, the dogs aren't stupid. They know there's a big difference between a little plastic doll and a real baby, but it creates a template of behavior, you know,
right.
It's something that's similar enough that the dog can have some behavioral reference point to at least have a clue about how to relate to that thing. And also, I think for mom, you know, as awkward and goofy as it might be in the beginning, it'll give her a sense of what it's going to feel like to have this thing around you, you know, more or less all the time, and where you're going to be likely to set it down and how it's going to feel. And I mean, again, it's not a make or break step. The, you know, rank management is much more important, but it's, if you have the time, it's really, it's helpful. It's helpful, you know, for both, for the mom and the dog.
Yeah.
Goofy as it is.
I know. And sometimes people are like, so I'm supposed to walk around with my dog with an empty stroller? Like, people are going to think I'm crazy. And then it's like, well, you could put a doll in there. And then it's like, well, that... it's like a thing.
Yeah, well, my response to that is like, who cares what people think? They don't have to live with your dog and your baby. So, I mean...
Yeah. So the other thing I think that's just so important is that one of the things that I always feel bad for the dogs in, you know, in the situation, because I know that, you know, new baby, kind of everything gets turned upside down and everybody's exhausted and all that kind of stuff. But that, and people have shared this with me and sort of acknowledged this to me over and over and over again. They're like, yeah, you know, he's really not used to get, you know, an hour, you know, two walks a day, one an hour and one 20 minutes. And now he's lucky if he gets 20 minutes a day. And how there's a lot that you can do also to just help support your dog and yourself by getting help, you know, hire a dog walker, get a dog walker lined up, and to get that started before the baby comes, so that then, you know, all of these things, like you said, it's so important to be mindful of the association. If everything just blows up as soon as the baby enters the house, it's such an easy setup for the dog to have a negative association of the baby, and that is the opposite of what we want.
Exactly, and you know, one of the things that I'm a little bit proud of that I kind of came up with also in relation to that is this, you know, I started to be aware that a lot of moms, you know, like you said, they're sleep deprived, especially in the first year, right? Sleep deprived and stressed out and all that stuff. And oftentimes what happens is when mom finally puts the baby down, they'll go spend time, they'll take the dog for a walk, they'll go do something with the dog. So that, you know, and then when it's time to deal with the baby, to nurse and to do whatever, then the dog kind of gets put away and it becomes an instant zero-sum game for the dog. And you know, of course, it's impossible to do this perfectly. It's not even necessary, but I try to encourage people to set it up the other way. When the baby goes down for a nap, you put the dog away, crate him for a while, give him a bone, something. But when the baby comes out for nursing or for, you know, lying down in the middle of the floor and playing in your play area, bring the dog into that and involve the dog somehow. You know, for nursing, maybe it's just, you know, having him lie down in a doggy bed next to you and you're nursing your baby with one hand and stroking your dog's head with the other, and the dog starts to get, oh, the presence of the baby, it's family time, you know, they start to get that sense of the family unit of the three of us or the four of us. And that, you know, I've had a lot of people do that. I mean, it really has a big effect.
Yeah.
And it also gives mom a break, right?
Right. Well, and you think about just what, you know, like the association, like, oh, well, when the baby's present, I get ignored. And when the baby's gone, I get attention. And so that's going to create that negative association. So you're saying to flip it around and actually have the dog get attention when the baby is present. And then when the baby's down for a nap, the dog gets less attention.
Exactly. And of course, if you haven't done your prep work with the rank management and all that, and, you know, setting boundaries, you know, your dog's a spaz and out of control, then you can't do that. And then you end up in a negative spiral, basically.
Yeah. Well, there's a ton of information in here. It's great if you are expecting or planning on, you know, planning a family at any point. Even better, before you're pregnant, get started on some of this stuff.
Well, that's the whole thing. I tell people at 8 months, you find out you have 16 months, right? You find out you're pregnant about a month out in, and you got 8 months before the baby arrives, and another 8 months before you hit that critical juncture when the baby starts crawling. So you technically have 16 months to deal with your dog.
Yeah. So sooner the better, for sure.
Sooner the better.
All right. Well, it's a great book, plenty of information. It's called Good Dog, Happy Baby. Again, the website is gooddoghappybaby.com, and you can get it pretty much anywhere books are sold, certainly on Amazon. Michael, thanks so much for your time today. It was great to talk with you about your book, and thanks for writing it and providing the resource for people who are expecting.
Sure. Can I throw in one more quick thing? I'll take less than 30 seconds.
Sure.
Well, I'm in the process of my website of developing a community website, and you know, where I'm going to be providing probably 3 monthly conference calls where people can ask me questions, and I'm building an online video course that's going to go with the book. But I really want to create community around this subject, a forum where people can share experiences together, a Q&A, which I'll do a video Q&A where I'll respond to people's questions with videos.
Yep.
So go to my website, join the community. It's in development right now, but you know, I'll send you updates and so forth as it builds out.
Great. And that's at gooddoghappybaby.com.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. We will be back in just a few minutes with Ellen Escarcega, who's the chair of Citizens for Off-Leash Areas. We're going to talk about the future of dog parks in Seattle. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes.
The skies are charcoal gray. It's a dreary downtown day. But at the end of my 30-foot leash, my little friend, Quiche. Quiche La Poodle is her name.
Wish your dog didn't hate going to the vet. Wish you were welcomed by a team who cared. Jet City Animal Clinic is an enjoyable respite from the same old thing. Dr. Anderson and her team have created a full-service facility that combines veterinary expertise with a comfortable style. Jet City Animal Clinic is located in Seattle's Capitol Hill neighborhood on 12th Avenue across from Seattle U. Bring your crazy questions, odd ideas, and alternative thinking. Jet City Animal Clinic will work with you to keep your furry family members healthy and happy. Traditionally educated with an open mind, call us at 206-329-0253 or email info@jetcityanimalclinic.com to make an appointment. Jet City Animal Clinic, a unique approach to the health care of your urban pet, a local family practice. jetcityanimalclinic.com.
Pure Air's powerful formula lets you eliminate pet odors safely. It's strong enough to effectively get rid of smells like urine, plus stronger odors like those that can be caused by illness. Pure Air is safe enough to spray directly onto people, animals, or use in the bath or laundry. Pure Air is perfect for dealing with dire situations, refreshing your dog between baths, or just before company comes. Pure Air is the most effective product you can buy to remove stinky pet odors safely. Find it at stores like Mud Bay, McClendon's, and Natural Pet Pantry, or visit their website, pureair.com. That's pure, A-Y-R-E.com. I'm Julie Forbes, host of The Dog Show. Pure Air is the only odor eliminator you'll find in my home. You'll love it. The Natural Pet Pantry is Seattle's original source for wholesome dog and cat meals, offering 8 different protein options to accommodate your pet's dietary needs. Made locally using all U.S.-sourced ingredients, their freshly ground stews, raw or cooked, can be purchased from their 2 stores in Burien and Kirkland, most independent pet supply stores, or delivered right to your door. Go to naturalpetpantry.com for more information. I'm Julie Forbes, and my first choice for my pet's food is the Natural Pet Pantry. It's the educated choice.
Tired of the insanity of other talk radio stations? Just click your radio knob and say there's no place like Alternative Talk 1150.
Crummy day is our game. Quiche. Quiche Lorraine.
Welcome back to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. And we're back with Ellen Escarcega, who is the chair of COLA, which stands for Citizens for Off-Leash Areas. And Ellen, welcome to the show. Very glad to have you on today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I've been seeing quite a bit going on around the community about this dog park survey. Take the survey, dog park survey. So tell us what is going on with this.
So what happened is the city council and the parks department have gotten, you know, a lot of complaints over the years from both dog owners and non-dog owners about legal land for dogs to run and the illegal use of the park system. This is, you know, a long battle that stemmed from the 90s leash laws and how restrictive they were. And in 97, the Parks Department opened a pilot, basically, to have the dog park. And it sort of stayed a pilot for 18 years. So this is the first time that the city council has asked for a master plan. Much like they did for skate parks and bicycles, they're trying to figure out how are we going to handle how dense Seattle is and how many dogs live here in the coming, you know, 10 to 20 years.
Right.
So really, it's a survey to try to figure out what dog owners believe about our current system.
So, and where do people, how do people take the survey?
It's on SurveyMonkey. So the shortest URL I can give is to go to my organization, which is a nonprofit. It's seattlecola.org, and the link is very prominent there. There are longer surveys, but if you just Google, you know, Seattle Dog Survey, you'll hit it first.
Okay. And so it's a way for the city to get information from dog owners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you Google, I just did it. I searched for Seattle Dog Survey, and it was the first thing. Seattle Dog Owners Survey, SurveyMonkey. So you click on that, and then so they are looking to, it sounds like, sort of expand the options for...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're trying to figure out whether they need to open up the system wider, whether we're happy with what we have, whether the parks are big enough, do we need lights, do we need, you know, dog washing stations, everything.
Mm.
It's a full assessment of the current program.
Interesting. Yeah, and you know, it is a good point because, you know, Seattle is growing so fast, one of the fastest growing cities in the country. And then I've, you know, everybody's especially now saying like, oh, do you know there's more dogs than kids in Seattle? And it sure feels that way. So as the city expands, the dog population expands, and especially in, you know, like, for example, like with Amazon downtown where there's, you know, where people take their dogs to work. I mean, and then just in general, otherwise, I'm always amazed when I'm seeing clients like downtown, how many people are out walking their dogs, you know, in the city streets. I mean, really, the city is literally crawling with dogs.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. But it's not proven how many we have here. I mean, nationwide, there are 43 million dogs to 38 million children. So we've already outpaced it with the dogs. But in Seattle, that ratio is way higher. The current estimate is that one in four households has at least one dog and that there's around 150,000 dogs. But the only proof we really have is 43,000 licensed dogs.
Yeah. Hard to get accurate numbers, huh? Well, the survey should be very telling. It'd be interesting to see how many, because it asks, you know, how many dogs do you have?
Yeah, it asks questions about dog one, two, and three. And every question lets you answer for three dogs because uh-huh. That's the legal limit you're allowed.
Yeah. So, and also just a plug for licensing your dog right now. I've had Seattle Animal Shelter on and talked about that. And, you know, it really is so important to help fund, you know, animal control and their efforts there. So if you have not licensed your pets, dogs and cats too, in your city, wherever you are, really recommend and encourage you to do that because it supports them being able to do the work that they do. So it's interesting. It asks, what level of training does your dog have? Where do you routinely keep your dog? I mean, it's I don't know. It'd be really interesting to see the results of this. So
yes, I'm very curious.
Yeah. So if you go, if you just search for Seattle Dog Survey, that is a great way to get it. Or people can go to COLA's website, which is seattlecola.org. And that's C-O-L-A, COLA, seattlecola.org. And there's a link to the survey there as well. And so this survey is going to be just a way for the city to gather information about people who have dogs. Now, is this survey for people who only live in Seattle?
Yes, it's only in Seattle, because this is Seattle Parks and Recreation, Seattle Animal Shelter, and COLA who put this survey out. So it really is only going to affect people inside Seattle.
Okay. So, okay, and here it asks you what your zip code is. So you'll have to, you know, be within Seattle city limits.
And it's really only Seattle dog owners, but it's both dog owners who use the dog parks and the ones that don't use the dog parks. There are specific questions in the middle saying, why don't you use the dog park? That we really need answers. Mm.
So what are the challenges? So tell us a little bit about what COLA does. I mean, you guys just sort of organize and run the dog parks in the city?
Yep. So we advocated for every dog park, the 14 that we have. And that was years in the making for each dog park, because it takes a while.
Yeah.
And then we are under contract with Parks and Rec to maintain the dog park. And that was a contract back in 97 when they opened the pilot. So it's been 18 years. There's been no designated line item in the park's budget for dog parks. So COLA, as a nonprofit, fundraises to maintain them. Mm. Parks does sort of the basic maintenance. They remove the garbage. They provide a little bit of stuff that they borrow from other budgets. But we've purchased gravel. We've purchased chips. We've purchased chairs, kind of everything that goes on inside the dog park. We supplement the budget of the parks department.
Right.
And that's changing this year. That's part of why the survey is happening. $500,000 has been allocated to the parks department budget for the next 5 years. And this survey will help inform how they spend that money.
Mm. Well, it's great. It seems that there's this shift happening. That it's sort of getting, I mean, is that your experience that this is a good thing ultimately?
We're thrilled. Oh, yeah. Yes, we're thrilled. I mean, some kind of change needs to happen. We're pretty behind. We spent a lot of money on our dog park system for sure, but it's we've got half as many parks as Portland, Vancouver, or San Francisco, and we're 100 acres behind in land compared to those three cities.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. They have, on average, 120 acres each. Depends a little bit. And then on average, 32 dog parks each, and we have 14.
Wow. And is that because of this shift that's happening now, is just happening now and didn't happen a while ago?
Yeah. I mean, I think our pilot stayed a pilot a really long time. Yeah. Portland's pilot was in 2004. Vancouver's was in like 98, and they opened 7, and then the next year they opened 25.
Wow.
So we did 7 in 97. We added one more in 2001. And we've added 6 since 2001, but that's 14 years, and all 6 share 2.3 acres.
Yeah.
1.2 acres of which is under I-5 and very underutilized.
Yeah. Well, again, if you live in Seattle and you have a dog, please take the survey, whether you go to dog parks or not. You can either search Seattle Dog Survey on your search browser, or you can go to COLA's website, which is seattlecola.org, C-O-L-A, cola.org, and there's a link to it there. And participate in the survey, and then just stay tuned, and we'll look forward to hearing, Ellen, I'll look forward to hearing, you know, as this progresses, what all goes on. But thanks so much for coming on today and just telling us a little bit about what's going on and kind of getting the word out about the survey, and for all that you guys do to keep our dog parks, the few that we have, maintained.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. All right. So reminder again, the Vashon Sheepdog Trials this year are September 10th through the 13th on Vashon Island. You can go to VashonSheepdogClassic.com. If you've missed any of our over 300 episodes, you can find them archived on dogradioshow.com. send me an email if you'd like a dog show car sticker. They are no charge, and I'm happy to mail them out to you wherever you are. They are all over the country and actually all over the world now. Just email me, host@dogradioshow.com. We'll be back next Wednesday live at 2 p.m. Thanks for listening.